The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 374 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Well, it's been a tumultuous few days in Bogota and around the country with nationwide strikes taking place initially against the tax reforms that were proposed by President Iván Duque's government. These, of course, now have been shelved, and the government will go back to the drawing board with reference to this. And indeed, heads have rolled this Monday with the Minister of the Treasury, the Planning Minister and others resigning the government. So we'll see what happens in this turbulent and uncertain time here in Colombia. This week's episode, 374, we're talking to Heidi Pastor Half in Cali. And this is a really interesting show because we're talking about emerging Jews in Colombia. So people changing their religion to that of Judaism. So very interesting. And of course, there was an article out in the Washington Post about 2 weeks ago done by Half herself and her images, her photography showing this. So really, really fascinating story. Thank you to all of those who tuned in to our talk with Ángela Álvarez, or Ángela Sierra, her nom de plume. It was incredibly popular. People liked the free-flowing conversation and the discussion about being a third culture child. A lot of people tuned in for that indeed. Of course, can I remind those of you out there that we're still pitching the there's a photo workshop with combat photographer Malcolm Linton in Mompox, Colombia. So colonial Mompox is the setting for a photography workshop with a very renowned combat photographer, Malcolm Linton. You can hear about this a few episodes ago, and indeed just look up the website malcolmlinton.com. There are spaces available in May, July, and August. So we've got three workshops coming up. So sign up for that if you're here in Colombia, or if you're thinking of coming. Anyway, this is episode 374. I'll leave you in the capable hands of Emily Hart, who'll give you the news, and then we'll be back with Heidi Pastor Half talking about emerging Jews in Colombia. So thank you again, and don't go away.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your top stories for the week of May 3rd, 2021. After days of nationwide protest and thousands on the streets of Colombia, part of a movement known as the Paro, President Iván Duque has agreed to drop the controversial tax reform bill, which sparked the movement, though he says reform of some kind will still be necessary. Responsible for the bill, Finance Minister Alberto Carrasquilla handed in his resignation at the start of this week. Protests went on for 5 days and continued even after the announcement, led by labour unions and student movements, but joined by many others. Though the reform bill catalysed the protests, those on the streets were protesting inequality, state violence, failure to implement the peace process, corruption, aerial fumigation plans, and narco-politics, among many other themes. There is not yet a final count of deaths connected to the protests, which were mostly peaceful, though incidents of property damage, road blockades, and confrontations with police did occur. NGO Temblores registered 940 cases of police violence during the protests. This includes at least 21 homicides, 92 victims of physical violence, 672 arbitrary detentions, and 4 victims of sexual violence. Threats and harassment were also widely recorded. Press freedom group FLIP documented a further 33 aggressions against the press. The president insists that reform is vital to stabilising Colombia's finances in the face of the pandemic, maintaining its credit rating and funding social programs. There is supposedly consensus on the need for temporary taxes on business and dividends, an increase in income tax for the wealthiest, and deepened state austerity measures. The central bank warned on Friday that failure to reform could have a negative impact on the economy, while the loss of the country's investment-grade credit rating has already been priced in by many investors. Leaders of the National Strike Committee said the protests will continue. Withdrawing the tax proposal was just one of multiple demands. And in a key step for Colombia's peace process, former leaders of the FARC have accepted responsibility for kidnappings and some related human rights abuses during the civil conflict. This is part of Case 001 at the War Crimes Tribunal, known as the HEP. The FARC took more than 20,000 hostages between 1990 and 2016, many of whom were subjected to torture and degrading treatment. Their ransoms provided the guerrilla group's second largest income. In a statement, the FARC said leadership clearly assumes responsibility for kidnappings which took place and explicitly recognises the suffering inflicted unjustifiably on victims, their families, friends and, of course, all of Colombian society. The group will continue to give information to help find the remains of hostages who died captive. And the third wave of coronavirus continues. New daily cases at around 17,000. This figure has held since mid-April. ICUs are at over 90% capacity in numerous major cities, including Bogota, Medellin, Cali, Santa Marta, and Valledupar. Colombia has now suffered 75,000 deaths in a population of 50 million. 7% of the population has now received at least one dose of the vaccine. That was this week's news. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is the third segment of episode 374 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm here in Bogota. My very special guest this week is Heidi Pastor-Huff, and she's in Cali. And the reason she's on the show is actually I've only just become aware of her, although she's been in Colombia since 2003, but she wrote she's part of an amazing article, and she took the photographs that came out this past week in the Washington Post about emergent Jews in Cali and in Colombia. So, but anyway, we're going to talk all about this. Welcome on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Very happy to be here.
No, it's so exciting because it's not only history, it's religion, it's got contemporary society, and we're going to get deep into this and so on and all of the important things that we need to talk about. But first and foremost, how did you end up in Colombia, in Cali?
Well, you want the short version or the long version? The short version is for love. And the long version is I followed my boyfriend from college. I wanted an adventure. I wanted to learn Spanish. I wanted to live in another culture. And voila, here I am.
Oh, very good. And he's Colombian, of course.
He's Colombian,
yeah. Okay. All right. And I mean, you're a New Yorker, right? Yes. Or New Jersey?
No, I'm from the Long Island. I grew up in a tourist community, so very small town. We were actually the only Jewish family in the town at the time.
Okay.
And my father would drive us about 25 minutes to the nearest synagogue for religious classes.
Oh, wow. Okay. I had the idea, you know, Brooklyn or something, you know, very, you know, and it would be but it's an extreme change anyway, Colombia from Long Island, let's say. But fantastic. Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this article. I mean, the title is The Emerging Jews of Colombia. Now, if we just talk basically about this, when we discuss emerging Jews, what we're talking about is new Jews. Right?
New Jews, yes. Yes, they're new Jews. They're converts.
Mm-hmm. So these are, like I would say, evangelical Christians or Catholics who are converting to Judaism.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're talking about.
And so you did this story and you took the photographs because you are a photographer, storyteller, and you did this story. And it's really caught not only my imagination, but the thousands of comments on the article. Some good, some bad.
I am totally blown away. I had no idea. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. When I pitched the story to the Washington Post, I thought I was pitching for their blog. I thought I was just going on. They have a beautiful page for photography, and mm-hmm. That's how I thought it was going. I had no idea this was happening. So I'm blown away with the response, with the interest. So many people that have been reaching out to me to share their stories with me as well. As a Colombian who grew up in the States, and they're feeling of belonging, or the Colombian that actually converted to Judaism and moved to Israel, or the Colombian who converted to Judaism but lives in Miami. And everybody is reaching out and sharing personal stories with me. And I'm blown away. I had no idea it would reach this many people.
Well, it's huge. I mean, it is huge, because I had a listener, and I'll mention it, Zach, a listener who wrote to me saying, it would be great if you got this writer on. And there we are. You are here. So
here we are.
But that said, let's talk about this. I mean, you know, Curly's not, I would say, I don't consider it being, you know, like a seat of much Judaism, but there are seven emerging Jewish synagogues, right?
Well, there's seven that we know about. There's three that are recognized by their parallel organization. But then there are maybe four others that we know of but are not involved with any organization. So they're doing the process on their own without the help of anybody else. Perhaps through like a rabbi that comes from Colombia, from Israel or Mexico or Argentina or the U.S. and goes into these communities and starts teaching them about Judaism. And then they decide to do their process on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't want to get into it right now when you're ready to, but when we talk about Judaism, it is very centralized here in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And you have one organization that is monitoring all the other organizations. So what's happening here is we have the traditional community that's under one umbrella, and then we have the emerging community that's under another umbrella, parallel organizations. And then you have other people that are doing this process on their own that are not a part of any umbrella organization.
Okay. But do they, I mean, you talk about these parallels and do they mix? Do they blend or they stay parallel?
They stay very parallel. The chief rabbi of Israel consults with the communities that are under their organization, their umbrella organization, which I believe it's called the Comunidad. I have to look it up because I don't remember offhand, but it's this like an Israeli community for emerging Jews, something of the sort. And they consult everything with the chief rabbi. He helps them in terms of security rules. And he admires them very much.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me there's actually 400 families that have been able to make aliyah from these communities in Israel over the past 10 years.
Hmm. I'm fascinated by it because, I mean, we're in an overwhelmingly Catholic country. Obviously, there's evangelism, which has made immense inroads into various parts of the country, offering a degree of forgiveness to people. You know, it's that kind of thing in the jungle areas or in inner cities or so on. But you don't hear about people converting to Judaism. I mean, really. And I mean, there's history of Jewish immigrants to Colombia, not huge like Argentina or I guess Brazil or places like, but there is a history here, and I've often referred to it, and the book on this subject is by Enrique Ruiz Martinez called Quinta Sion, and he talks about the, you know, different waves of Sephardic and Ashkenazi and so on, but you just don't hear it. And in your article, I mean, you mentioned that there are roughly 4,000 Jews in Colombia. I mean, this is a tiny figure.
Tiny.
Tiny. But so why so few, first of all?
Well, I think in the height of the Jewish community would have been maybe in the 80s, 70s, 80s. But then everybody started leaving. Even my husband at the time, he left to go to Venezuela. And we lived a few years in Venezuela before coming back to Colombia because the situation was so dangerous. A lot of people left Cali. They went to Bogota. They went to Panama. They went to Mexico. They went to the United States. They went to Israel. But you also, so you had no job opportunities in Cali, very few.
Mm.
So because of the danger and the lack of opportunities, people left.
Mm. Now, is your husband a Jewish Colombian?
Yes, he is. His family, his father's family arrived in Cali in about 1936. His grandfather fled Nazi Germany while his parents perished in the Lodz ghetto, and his uncle, his grandfather's brother, ended up in Argentina, and he started the Reform community in Argentina, Hans Harf.
Okay.
And Helmut, the grandfather, stayed in Cali and met my husband's grandmother, who also came with, was able to come with her entire family from Germany to Colombia. And when Simon, my husband, his grandfather, Helmut, arrived, he tried to get visas for his parents, and they couldn't get visas. So that's what happened. Colombia had a small window where they allowed immigrants in.
Yeah, it was very small. It was very small indeed. And then, of course, Colombia for the start of World War II was, well, for a lot of it, was pro-Axis.
I'm not sure of that, but I don't know. So I haven't read that.
They switched later on. They switched later on because you've got, when they could see which way the war was going. But because then a couple of years into the war, the Colombian government then took all of the German immigrants' properties and Japanese and put them into, we can't say concentration camps, but camps. They appropriated these things. And outside of Bogota, in a town called Fusagasuga, was the hotel, I can't remember, the Sabana, and that's where a lot of the ones from Bogota were put. I was doing some research on something else, but came across the files in the archives in Bogota, and there were post-war documents sent over from Germany making the claim that some of their citizens had had land taken from them, and therefore, and that wasn't the agreement. You know, they had to pay a tax, but they were to get their land back. Of course, they never did. And the Japanese community, which is bigger in Cali,
but, in Palmira, it's right next to Cali.
Their original seat was in Corinto, and because of the violence, moved in, and because of the, you know. So anyway, there's all these stories, and I can, yeah, I'm a big geek when it comes to these sort of things, so I get very excited.
I do too. I love that. I found an article. So we were a friend of mine who were also in the process of trying to tell the story of our traditional Jewish communities, because it is dwindling, and there are very few people left, and I don't want to say it's dying, but it seems to be that right now, the emerging communities are so much larger than the traditional communities. So it is something that needs to be addressed. So a friend of mine had wanted to document the history of the Jewish community. Yeah. And by doing so, we started going through lots of archives and documents. And we came across, and you have to remind me, Encuesta, in English, a survey that they gave to all the Jewish members of the community. And on the survey, it was very interesting. So they said, what religion were you when you left the country, and what religion are you declaring when you arrive? So of course it was a lot of Israelita, or some said that they were Jewish. They were now Christian or Catholic. So they were changing their religion on this form. Then they asked them as well, what kind of atrocities did you encounter, and just the messages and what they wrote or what they lost and the money and what was confiscated was unbelievable, because you have this very official form and they're asking very personal questions, and those answers reveal so much of what was happening at the time and what happening in Colombia, and even the fear that they were feeling to come in here. And I don't know the exact date, but there was, we found in the ledgers or the minutes of the meetings that there's three communities in Cali. We have the Ashkenazi, the Sephardic, and then you have the Aliman. So the Aliman were the Jews from Germany, right? They had to have their own community. So my husband's grandparents were founders of that community, and they had all their prayers and their meetings in German. And then I think at a certain point during the war, towards the end, they found a German submarine off the coast of Cartagena, I think, or was it? Yeah. And then they decided that they could no longer speak German. It was illegal to speak German. So they stopped meeting for a period of time because these immigrants didn't speak Spanish. And they didn't speak Yiddish. So they just stopped meeting because they weren't allowed to speak German.
It's just incredible. Just incredible. These hidden stories. And so much is just sort of washed away. It's important what you're doing. Keep doing the research.
Thank you.
So, but tell us, I mean, this research came along, and so I want to go back into this thing, the parallel communities of Judaism here in Colombia. So does Israel recognize the emergent Jews here then? Or are they separate? I mean, it's very weird for me to think about this.
It's a very complicated issue. So halachically, according to Jewish law, they are recognized. Mm-hmm. You are a Jew now, and we will receive you as a Jew. Mm-hmm. But you want to make Aliyah? You can't make Aliyah. So they won't receive them as a Jew in Israel in terms of making Aliyah, the land of return. But we will accept you as a Jew. And it gets very complicated because it's the Jewish agency that represents Israel. Yes? And it's the Jewish agency that is in Bogota. So anybody who wants to go to Israel, you go to the Jewish agency and they're going to help you. And you have a right to go to Israel. Mm-hmm. But in order to go to Israel, in order to make Aliyah, you have to belong to a traditional Jewish community. So that would mean the Sephardic, the Ashkenazi, or the German. And that's another thing. Right now, the German community in both Bogota and Cali is a very reformed community. And we can talk about that in a second. In order to belong to the traditional Jewish community, you have to have had an Orthodox conversion done in the United States or Israel, or maybe Argentina, but they have a list of where you can get your conversion done. No Orthodox conversions that are done in Colombia are valid to belong to a traditional Jewish community. And what do we have happening? We have groups coming from Israel and grabbing these evangelical churches, and this is where the controversy comes in, and grabbing these people, teaching them Judaism, doing a mass conversion where many times the conversion process is sped up, and then they promise these people, you can go to Israel, your conversion's valid, and then they go to Israel, they go and they request, and they say no. So when I brought up the Reformed communities, a Reform conversion is accepted to go to Israel. And a Reformed conversion can be done in Colombia. The German community is doing conversions. And right now, even though my father-in-law is still a member of the German community, he says when he goes to synagogue, he's only one of three original members. The rest are converts. So you do have cases where people have gone through one or two Orthodox conversions here in Colombia, find out that their conversion is not valid to go to Israel, and then they decide, well, I'm going to become a member of the emerging community that will accept my conversion. I can be there for 2 years, and then I can go to Israel. And that's what's happening as well. So then one can easily start to question, what is the purpose? Why are you converting? What is your goal? The people that I photograph who are coming to this with such passion that they would never consider going to a Reform community. They say, no, our path is Orthodox Judaism. This is the way it is. And I will make it to Israel continuing on this path. I'm not taking the shortcut.
I mean, a lot of things were brought to my attention by scrolling through. I think I went through about 200 of the comments on your piece. But when I saw the, 1,000, I'm not going all the way through that. But there are a lot of people asking, what you just mentioned, the motive for converting to Judaism. In your piece, nicely put, there are people just saying, this really was the religion or is the religion that has appealed to me, the lifestyle, the morals, the existence. And you can, that kind of thing comes across. But of course, there are others, it's like it's a way out somewhere else. But when you talk about the reform and then you talk about this and Aliyah, it all gets very murky. It all gets very, there's a huge gray area there. And it's going to be increasingly difficult, I suppose, for the rabbis to control. I don't know.
Well, they stopped looking at all conversion requests, all Aliyah requests from these emerging communities. Right now they're halted. So there is a couple who, in the article, they're photographed and they're in Israel now, and they just got a visa so that they can do their conversion in Israel. Mm-hmm. You have, I think the problem is that we cannot look at these as the groups as a whole. And I think we have to be very careful, because that when we start generalizing and putting people into categories, we lose their motives, and everybody's going and they're searching for something, and everybody has their own reason to get there. Mm. And whatever it is, they found something, but we don't know what is the backstory of how they got there. And if you look at them as a whole, it's very easy to generalize. And we are going to find people that their motives are just get me out of Colombia, you know, and we're going to find people that are truly passionate about Judaism and this is the way of the life, and you're going to find people who are like, yeah, I like Judaism, and it's I'm gonna get something good out of it, you know. I think also something that you and I discussed before the podcast started, that in Colombia is social mobility is so difficult. It's almost non-existent here. And I think, you know, you go into small neighborhoods of Cali and you just kind of see how it's almost like Groundhog Day every single day there. Nothing changes. And the wet's always hot. And, you know, maybe it's just, you know, it doesn't seem like a very pleasant place that you want to wake up and be every single day. And I think in this search for identity, we're also searching for a place to give our children more opportunities. Mm. And through Judaism, they probably found a purpose in life, a purpose in something bigger to believe in than themselves. And then at the same time, a possibility to give their children a better future.
Mm. Mm. The question of identity is one to which I often come to here in Colombia. And in fact, in the last week's show, I was, you know, my children are bicultural. Of course they are, you know, half English, half Colombian. And this identity question, you know, being the second culture and so on, or third culture, it's tough. But also Colombian identity on its own, I don't think... We, and I say we, I live here, it's been a long time, not as long as you, it's been a long time, but I don't think, you know, if you were to ask fully, or you ask 20 Colombians about identity, they wouldn't come back to you with the same answer. There wouldn't be one. And the only thing that maybe would be of note would be the yellow of the Colombian football jersey or something like that. You know, it's but you know, somebody wouldn't. One person might say birds, and another might say vallenato or coffee or something. And I think that's one of the big issues here: identity. And so therefore, that you know, to convert to Judaism is potentially, you know, joining. Something recognized with millennia history to it. I don't know. I mean, you should, I think you're suggesting that a lot as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then this other thing is there are articles, and I think the Washington Post did print one many years ago, and I know it's on NPR, and I know there's something in Atlantic something about the sort of, I guess it's the crypto Jews in Colombia, and they say that Bello Antioquia is one of the sort of key places where perhaps more Jewish people settled, or I don't know, they've discovered what is it, a Y chromosome? I don't know.
Yeah, they say that, and you can hear. I mean, in Colombia, they say people are very, the paisas, Antioquia, they're very proud. Mm. And they have a reputation being very hard workers. Mm. And they'll say, oh, it's because we were settled, we were Jews, you know, and they say that. Although from people that I've spoken to and in my own research, we haven't found any proof that says that crypto Jews came from Spain and settled in Antioquia. And we're not saying it couldn't have happened. It's just we haven't found anything. I do believe that there is a professor, perhaps in Antioquia or Bogota, that is or wants to do a DNA research. But as you can say, I think most Spaniards, you do any DNA, I mean, or any Colombian, you're going to do DNA. You are going to find, you know, roots back to Spain and essentially Jewish blood, you know. And we can't look at last names. I don't think last names is a really good way to decide if you have Jewish roots or not. Another interesting tidbit is, you know, how Spain opened up the application, you know, you could get the citizenship if you could show that you had Jewish descent. 28,000 Colombians applied for the Spanish passport.
How many got it?
I don't know how many got it, but everybody I know applied.
I know of people here in Bogota who got it. They paid a genealogist in Spain who was able to trace them all the way back, and they found Sephardic, you know, ancestry there. And so they've got they're not going. The mother doesn't want to go. She's my age, but she said, you know, opportunity for my daughter.
Exactly.
Simple as that.
Education opportunity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 28,000. It's a huge number. But so I don't. You know, I think this thing. As you say, why would persecuted Jews under the Inquisition come to Colombia or Nueva Granada or whatever under the Inquisition?
I mean, we have records and proof, and I believe one of the oldest synagogues in the Americas is in Curaçao. Mm-hmm. And they ended up in Curaçao. They ended up in Jamaica, in Barbados, and Aruba. They would go to a Dutch or English colony where they were free to practice. Mm-hmm. And they quickly remarried. Mm-hmm. And in Judaism, after three generations, you kind of erase your lineage. You don't kind of, you do erase your lineage. You know, and it gets passed through the mother. So if, you know, three generations of the woman, boom, you're done. You have to start all over again, which is not a problem. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you do have that strong feeling that that's with your roots, that's fine. Go with it. I love it. You know, I think it's marvelous. But a lot of people, a lot of these emerging individual people that are emerging and converting, they are holding on to that. They're trying to find a certain evidence to kind of justify their decision. But you don't really need to have that. But people are grabbing onto it. Oh, yes, we never were able to eat pork in the house. Okay, interesting. Oh, my father used to kill the chicken this way. Okay, you know, and people are saying that they've noticed certain customs. I must have been Jewish. But I find, you know, I think we can believe whatever we want to believe, and history is written by the survivor. Yeah. So in the end, if they want to hold on to that, and that's their reason, you know, for doing it, bien pueda, you know?
I've heard of that. You know, there are people saying, oh, we always wondered why our grandparents painted the lintels of the doors, or why they tied different knots in the bases of their ruanas and stuff. And so you're getting to that, exactly. I think that's fascinating. But so, I mean, well, actually, one more thing about this and these curiosities. There was a very famous mayor of Bogota, Fernando Masuera, who married into the Jewish community, and that he was not from Bogota. He was mayor four times. Of course, this was before popular vote and everything, because it's in the 1940s and 30s. He was mayor during or just after the Bogotazo, and all of these things. And the family's other surname is Kling. K-L-I-N-G, and they have a big, own jewelry shops here. But he wasn't from Bogota, so he was provincial. And you're talking about this social mobility. He had some money, but by marrying into the Jewish community, elevated his status, but he was never part of, the Bogota upper class. It's really interesting when you study him.
That is interesting. But, you know, I mean, I've been here 18 years and I will always be La Gringa.
Yeah.
And I have people who say every time they hear my accent, they say, where are you from? And I'm like, again? Okay, I'm from New York. Yeah. And they're like, oh, and do you like it here? And I'm like, yeah. It's like, how long have you been here? I'm like, 18 years. So Colombians, I think in that way, it's very hard to fit in. So even if you make all the money, you know, and you become very wealthy, you're going to be judged. How did you make the money? Who did you marry? Who did you steal from? You know, everybody's very suspicious of everybody. Yeah. And it's very hard to be able to fit in. I mean, when will I stop being the gringo? When will you stop being el gringo?
It's the gringo. As you say, you're 18, it's something like 15 or so. And a taxi driver, oh, you like Colombia, you know, it's how, you know, like, and you're just like, come on, at the end of it. So you tell them how many years, oh, but you live here, you're practicing, you're Colombian. It's like, it's very nice of you to say so, but I am made, it's essentially a known thing that I'm not. I mean, that's it. It's essentially agreed by everyone that I'm not. And the suspicion, who did you rob? What business? I have my little businesses in Mompos, in Bolivar, and of course, I'm laundering dollars. That's, you know, there can't be any honest way why I have business.
Of course.
And so it's very sad on that front. But then that comes with so much of the history that's rolled into Colombia and the suspicion, as you say, and the victim type feeling and so on. But you're here for the long run. Your kids, obviously, growing up in the Jewish community, how do they feel about being Jewish in Cali, in Colombia?
Well, it's interesting. They have a very strong Jewish identity. And that was something that was very attractive to me with my husband when I met him and I came to Colombia for the first time. You know, we had Shabbos dinners every Friday night with his whole family, his uncle, the children, their children, you know, and they were 20 people Shabbos dinners. And it was this big sense of family, which growing up and being the only Jewish person in my small town, I didn't have. So it was very attractive to me. And my children are growing up with that. Not since the pandemic. Since the pandemic, it's been a disaster. But before that, you know, we would have Shabbos dinner every Friday night and with friends, with family. And it was this real sense of identity. And their friends would be like, oh, please invite me for Shabbos. I want to see what it's like. Mm-hmm. And we'd invite people and we'd do the blessings. And it was lovely. So my children are growing up with a real strong sense of Jewish identity and, you know, and kind of this feeling of community, which growing up in the U.S., you don't really have a sense of community. You belong to a synagogue, but is there this strong sense and you have a kinship with, you know, other Jews? Oh, you're Jews. Okay. We're members of the tribe. You know, maybe you don't say that, but you feel it. Mm-hmm. And then, but here in Colombia, particularly Cali, you have a real sense of community, an extended family. And my children certainly feel part of that extended family to the point that when an outsider comes in, we all just kind of look like we're suspicious. Who are you? Why are you here? You know, we're doing the same thing that people are doing to us.
Yeah. Fair enough. I was invited once to Shabbat in Antwerp to a friend's, and it was so nice. It was a really nice event. Everyone's sitting around the table, good chat, good food. I mean, I really enjoyed it. But I like that. I mean, that strong Jewish identity is so very important, and then it's so comforting to know, especially in a place where we wouldn't immediately consider, you know, a Jewish community, Cali, let's say, and Colombia as well. I mean, you're always the gringo, I'm always the gringo, and I realize today and now, the international community is much larger than it was back in 2003 when you moved, and back in 2007 when I moved. But I came to Cali in 2000 or something on a job, and we were at the Petronio Alvarez, me and the photographer. We were the two white people there. I mean, we were the two foreigners, and we caused quite a stir, you know. And so that kind of thing, and it's changed obviously dramatically since then. But we're on no level close to other Latin American countries, let's say Peru, Ecuador, Brazil, Argentina, etc. We're nowhere near, even though Colombia's
good.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's fun. It makes me laugh a bit because Colombia will go, oh, there's so many foreigners here. There really aren't. There really aren't. But I have to ask you this hard question, well, maybe an unpleasant question. Is there any type of persecution? Have you felt a discrimination?
I have not. Well, okay. No, that's not true. It's interesting because I will have some friends that will make comments and they're like, oh, those Julios. And I'm like, you'll make a comment like that? Mm. And I just pass it off as ignorance. And one day I was having a conversation with a woman and she said something about money. She's, oh, me salió el Julio, that my Jew came out. And I was like, what does that mean? And she's like, well, I can actually say that because I did the DNA and I have Sephardic roots. I'm just thinking, oh my God. So persecution, no. Attacks, no. But verbal stupidities, absolutely. Ignorance, you know, comments that, you know, we associate Jews with money or definitely have heard some of those.
Yeah. I'd say in Bogota, I think the community is very united here. And there is the menorah on the, was it, 94 or 93.
That's been so hard.
And the synagogue right up there by behind the Ernesto Grau gallery and so on. And you see quite a few, you know. But I don't, I mean, I've only seen a few of the people wearing, you know, the traditional outfits and so on. And in Chapinero as well, I've noticed a couple of homes there too. But again, it's not the norm.
No, definitely not. You in Bogota, you have a large emerging community as well. Also in Bogota, I totally lost what I was going to say, so we'll just go back. There's definitely, in Cali, we put them in Europe. They want to be seen. They want to make a presence. We, the Jews, want to make a presence. But you have to remember, 15 years ago, before we were so connected, many of these individuals in Cali or in Colombia didn't even know what a Jew was. Mm. I'd never even seen a Jew. And I walk into emerging communities and they say to me, you're the first Jew of blood that I've met. And I'm thinking, oh my God, okay. And their world has opened up. Mm. So even like 15 years ago, we had no presence in Colombia 20 years ago. It was very hard. But in Cali, and in Bogota, there still is. In Cali, there used to be a Jewish school. The community at a certain point had about 1,500 people. Wow. It was and there's a Jewish club. And, you know, and they had a reputation for really having a great school. So a lot of people that went in and put their children in the school were not Jewish, you know, and they really held the community in high regards. They also associate the community with money, with influence, which is not the case. It's not a very, Cali is not a very wealthy community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then there was another comment, and we're winding this down though. There was another comment about a Dutch con man doing conversions. And I just found it so curious.
Okay, first of all, if he is listening, please reach out to me. he has definitely heard of con men. We haven't gotten any names, but we do know that there are people coming in and going into these evangelical places and converting. There is one man in Cali many years ago, and I never met him, but he did a lot of damage to the community. I'm not sure how, but he's like, we don't talk about him. Okay. And he went in and started, you know, finding people in these other communities and starting to convert them. So they do exist. And that's why we also have to be very careful and question, who are you and why are you coming here? Mm-hmm. You know, and what promises were you told? You know,
that's so interesting. And I think as you just, I just kind of winding, but I mean, yeah, that we get here, there is such an ability to, I don't know. I would call it kind of piracy.
Yeah. Feed on the vulnerabilities of people that are looking for a better life. And it's not cheap. They're paying lots of money for a conversion. They could pay 6 million pesos in one of the last conversions. A couple paid, I believe it was 6 million pesos for the two of them. And, you know, the minimum salary in Colombia, I think, is about 800,000 pesos a month.
Around there.
And they were told that they would be able to go to Israel to find out you can't go to Israel.
This is hard work. I mean, this is hard
And it was
work.
Their second conversion.
So how do you feel, I mean, the future? I mean, let's wind this down then. How do you feel the future for emergent Jews? I mean, will there be, let's say, a mass acceptance, or the Judaism will continue to treat them as somewhat, I don't want to say outsiders, but different?
I sadly do, because a lot of racism exists, and I think even if they do end up in Israel, and I am rooting for a few to go there. There's a few that I know they would be such an asset to the country. Mm-hmm. But they will all be within their own enclave, I think. I think they'll end up being with other Colombians, probably in some settlement in the West Bank, because that's where Israel's going to want them. Yeah. And they, you know, I imagine the Ethiopian Jews in Israel stick together. You know, I know the Ashkenazi Jews, and then you have the religious Jews stick together and the non-religious Jews. You know, you kind of find your group. So I do believe if they go to Israel, they'll always be outsiders. And as long as they're in Colombia, they're not doubtful that they'll be accepted into, I mean, a handful might be accepted into a traditional community, but the most of them won't. Also because they're extremely religious, and our traditional community, even though it is an Orthodox community and the men and the women are separate, they're not, we're not as religious as them. We're traditionally religious, but we are not devout. You know, we're not going to pray three times a day, and we're not so passionate as they are with the prayer.
Almost born again, isn't it?
Well, yes, absolutely.
They're more hardcore than those of you with the blood.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so interesting.
I think there will always be outsiders. I mean, and you also have to understand that a lot of these communities, these emerging communities, they need members so they can build a membership, so they can have money, so they can support their school, all their vision for a Jewish future in Cali. Mm. But by doing so, they're also proselytizing. And in Judaism, we don't proselytize. And so that's number one. But number two is they're also welcoming people into their community that are just sympathizers, that don't want to convert, but want to continue practicing being Jew. So then it gets very hard for a larger organization to define who is a Jew and who isn't a Jew when you're allowing non-Jews to continue practicing with you. So it's this big labyrinth.
The labyrinth is true. I don't know where to go with that one. I don't know where to go from that at all. Where can any of my listeners either, I mean, do you have a website or do you want that people can read your writing?
Yes, HeidiHarf.com, HEIDIHARF.com. That's my website. You'll be able to see some of my stories of Colombia. And I'm starting to write. You know, I never saw myself as a writer until I was published by the Washington Post and they asked me to write something. So I kind of got forced into it. Like, describe what you felt, describe your feelings. What are you thinking with your photograph? So all of a sudden, I had to put everything into words, and it was lovely and freeing, and I'm looking forward to doing more. And my Instagram is Heidi Harf, I'm not very active on the social media, but I do promise to start trying to be more active.
A little bit. I mean, you've got to get it out there. The unfortunate realities of today is the self-promotion that we have to do. But your message got out. That article has been incredibly popular. Otherwise, I mean, we wouldn't have spoken without it. I mean, that's the truth.
Right. I'm so grateful.
Thank you so much for your time and for such it was a clear explanation of this. And as I will say again, an immense gray area in the Jewish faith.
I'm glad I could help. I think there's many questions and there's many answers. Yeah. And we have to be very open-minded and we have to be very careful not to lump a whole group of people together. And I think that comes with everything in our lives, you know?
Well, listen, thank you again for this. And we will send people to your website, HeidiHarf.com. And of course, I'll put it on the Facebook page and on Twitter and so on and so forth. But I thank you. I mean, it's been really, really interesting. It's been really educational for me because I don't know a lot. I mean, I read and stuff, but you don't hear it from the Jewish community in Colombia.
Yeah, you won't. But anyway, any more questions, anything, I'm happy to talk about it. It's one of my most interesting topics for me.
Perfect. Well, you heard it here first, folks. So this has been a really great episode with Heidi Harf. It's been episode 374 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Our thanks goes out to Heidi there in Cali. And we wish you all the best to stay well, stay healthy, and during this challenging lockdown again.
Again.
All right. Well, thank you again.
And
it's been a real pleasure. Please, for those of you listening, of course, subscribe, sign up, whatever. And we'll be back next week with more people talking about something Colombia related, of course. That's farewell from me. Bye-bye.